And welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Kirk on the line. We're going to return to Proverbs 6. Not yesterday, but on Friday on this program, we made our way through a significant part of it, but we're about to get to the part where God says, you want to be wise, observe the ant. Because the ant is first industrious. And you know, you people, you're apathetic. You're just lazy. You're lethargic. Now, don't expect that anything good's going to happen to you when you're that apathetic, when you're that lethargic. But look at the ant. And then he went on to say, you know, the ant's got something that you could really learn a lot about. Got no generals. Got no politicians. It's got no leadership. It's got no work foreman. It's got no government officers. Got none of that. Which tells you that the ants have something in common with God's idea of perfection, because, you know, there weren't any of those characters either in the Garden of Great Joy in Garden of Eden. Well, Kirk, what did you think about his example? We'll move through his testimony here in the proverb to get to the ants and what he has to say about them. But what do you think about his correlation between the ants and that which is in our interest?
Well, you know, we've always, as kids, we were taught about the ant and so forth. I'm seeing tons of nature films and all
mm-hmm.
that. So it's industriousness, all that sort of thing. But
right. Building for the common good. I mean, they build very strong, sturdy homes.
Mm-hmm.
They store food in excess of what they need. So when times get tough, the colony doesn't starve.
Yeah.
Multiple generations always work in harmony with one another, as opposed to, okay, you're old person, you just go collect Social Security over there, and you young person, you don't contribute. You just be a mushroom while you're indoctrinated at school. No, that's not how ants work. And you know, there's not a single military officer, even though they have fighter ants to defend the colony, and there's not a single work foreman, even though they colonies are comprised of workers.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, we've got you, Kirk.
We're kind of breaking up, so I may have missed the last couple of things you said. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. I know there was another show on Friday, and a lot of people mm-hmm. may not know that, but I have to say that if there was a certain irony of four guys sitting here talking about what God said to carefully consider and closely examine, and it was all about females.
Right, female ants. Yeah, he kept on calling me the ants as female.
And yeah, because so I looked at the, I was thinking about the characteristics of that, and you list them, and I want to, but everything about that would, if you used it as a metaphor for the set apart spirit, is
mm-hmm.
there.
Right.
It's the
yeah.
family.
Protection, nourishing, family. Building a home, taking care of the children, raising the children, working in harmony, you know, providing a sense of instruction so that everybody can be productively engaged and engaged. I mean, the spirit's empowering so that we act, so that we don't sit there lethargic
mm-hmm.
and apathetic, you know. The spirit is demonstrated through the way that that ants live.
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
And so I looked up the word, you know, and it's a nemul, which is a nun
mm-hmm.
and a lamb. And I thought I'd get your take on it, because basically it just means segmented insect, because, you know, they are segmented in the large size, and the bottom part is of a back end and a front mm-hmm. end, and the middle is kind of, they're cut in the middle, as it says.
Yeah.
And then it also has to do, and they cut their food up, you know, if you
right.
ever seen them or watched them,
right.
leaves and things, they'll cut them all into parts, and they'll cut
right.
up all the food and carry it back to the...
Right. So. Yeah, they're really good at harvesting food.
Mm-hmm. So what's your take on that? Is there anything to be seen in the nun-im land?
Well, the nun means children. Okay. You know, it's drawn in the forms of a sperm, and so it's a child born with an inheritance, and and look at the nature of the non-hierarchical structure of the ants and what they inherit. And so it's being born into an inheritance, of course, the set-apart spirit, because the ant, she, is symbolic of what she does in terms of empowering us, equipping us to engage. She's the one that's responsible for us being none, born spiritually with an inheritance. And the M is the primary letter associated with the set-apart spirit.
Right.
Because it's water. And water is not only the universal solvent for cleansing, her set-apart garment of light cleanses us of all sin. She's the one that causes us to look perfect before God, to be cleansed of our rebellion. But water is where all life has come. You know, you're born first out of water. Life emerged out of water, as Yahweh tells us.
So water, life, cleaning, yeah.
Yeah, so the noon mul is extraordinarily symbolic of the work of and the nature of the set-apart spirit.
And then leadership, the staff, and so forth.
Yeah. The Lamed is the shepherd's staff, and so the Lamed simply speaks of providing guidance, providing leadership. She is known as the counselor. Her roles are to help those who are engaged in the journey see the truth. This whole proverb, though, Kirk, is written so as to give us off our behinds,
mm-hmm.
to get us away from being so lethargic for, you know, sitting there watching the TV all the time, you know, and engaged, you know, because the set-apart spirit can't, if you look at a shepherd, what good is a shepherd if all the sheep are just lying down?
Mm-hmm.
The shepherd's the one that leads the sheep to the areas that are the most interesting, the most nourishing, the safest, the most enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if all the sheep just lie down on their back and put their feet up in the air, shepherd doesn't do you any good, does it?
No. You've got to recognize, too, that when this was written, and they knew so little about animals,
mm-hmm.
they're like, compared to what we know now, and it's a feminine noun.
Right.
You know, that all of them are, I mean, that's kind of freaky.
Yeah, it is. You know, there's two aspects of the reference to ants, and we'll get to that because we're going to go through this material. There's two aspects of it. One is the profound insights that were unknown to the world until just recently. Yahweh refers to the ants using all feminine pronouns and a feminine noun and all feminine pronouns. And the overwhelming preponderance of ants are feminine. Females. It's a very, 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 very small percentage of the ants that are that have male characteristics. The second is that he goes on to say that, you know, within the ants, they're all working together. They're all engaged. They're all doing something in support of the family, their colony. You know, we call them a colony, but it's a family to the ants. And yet there is no political official. No political hierarchy, no military hierarchy when they go off and fight to defend the colony. There's no economic hierarchy when they go off and gather and harvest food. There is no religious hierarchy, obviously. There are no hierarchies of any kind, which is exactly how Yah would want it. But we did not know that. Because, you know, with a lot of animals, there are hierarchies. You know, the wolf is the one that we know because we, you know, we have so much in common with wolves and the way they interact. But you know, there's no hierarchy. And Yahweh goes into great detail to say, this is what it is about them that you could learn a lot about if you were to recognize the benefits of not having a hierarchy. And what are the human institutions where there's a hierarchical structure? Really? All politics, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All military institutions, everyone that's ever existed, right? Every religious organization has hierarchy. Nothing worse than the Roman Catholic Church, of course. And then number four that has hierarchy is the civil structure of a community. And then lastly would be large corporate business. You know, if you're dealing in a family-owned small business, there's no hierarchy. But you're dealing with big business, corporate business, there's a hierarchy there too. So by saying this is what he likes about the ants, yeah, I was taking quite a whack at human hierarchies. He's telling you why he went on such a rant against King Saul.
Mm-hmm. No, that comes to mind. Absolutely.
And it also comes to mind Paul's endorsement of government when Yahweh was so anti-government.
Yeah.
And there's no mistaking that. I don't even know how the translations get around it. But why don't we bring us up right up to where we were. It says, first, my son. And my son is, this is Yahweh as Heavenly Father speaking to his children. If you're part of his family, this is what he wants you to know. My son, if you've ever given a pledge and joined in to be accepted with regard to your country, you have bound yourself, having shaken hands with that which is illegitimate and unauthorized, foreign and estranged from the palm of my hand. God bless America. God damn that song. God hates political infrastructure. He says, you know, if you're singing that song, if you're pledging your allegiance, if you're standing with your hat and hand over your heart and singing the Star Spangled Banner or whatever it is, whatever country you may live in, God says, what you're doing is you have bound yourself from something that is estranged from me.
Let me ask you a question. You're
sure.
Pretty good on American history.
Mm-hmm.
Founding of this country. You had all these guys who fought who claimed that the battle was against, the Revolutionary War was against, to overthrow a king so that law would reign.
Mm-hmm.
They divided up the country into 13 parts, all of which are probably each one of them were bigger than England. Very, very profitable for anyone who got to be governor of, I mean, mm-hmm. like a king of a European country.
Mm-hmm.
So we had just about every terrible thing going on that could be. They fought over taxes, and then they turned around and started taxing because,
yeah.
You know, George Washington had to go put down a squash rebellion when they said, wait a minute.
Yep.
And then they turned around, and when they elected George Washington, they said, you know, they were debating on whether to let him be the king or not. Now, who's kidding who?
Yeah, it was pure hypocrisy. And, of course, two-thirds of the colonists
didn't
support the revolution. You know, two-thirds were opposed to it. So, you know, this was, history is now written and viewed through the eyes of the victors. But, they imposed the very things that they were opposed to, didn't they?
Yeah, we've become tax crazy.
Yeah, and we certainly have a national religion now. It's called socialist secular humanism. It's a religion of politics with political correctness. It's the religion of academia, the religion of the media. It's our national religion. We've imposed one. And, of course, the big thing that we didn't like about the Brits is they had those redcoats here. Their military imposed everything.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we've got the largest standing military in the history of the world.
And the largest police force in the history of the
world.
Right.
And, of course, the realization is that I don't vote. I'm taxed without representation.
Yeah.
And that when I built companies, they couldn't vote. They were taxed without representation. You know?
Yeah.
And we're taxed every possible way. I mean, with duties and property taxes and sales taxes. Do you get to vote when you pay your sales tax?
No.
No. Do you get to vote when you pay your property tax? No. I pay property tax here in Ohio. I don't get to vote in Ohio.
No.
Taxation without representation, man. So we claim we fought that revolution over.
Well, the school's needed, you know, and they're performing so well.
They're performing so well, and that money is throwing more money at it is the way to go.
So,
Yeah. So yeah, there's a reason Yahweh says don't trust these things. You have aligned yourself with that which is estranged from my hand. Then he says, you lure others into relinquishing their freedom, and are you yourself are ensnared and controlled by the words of your mouth. You are caught by the words that are comprise your statements. And here, you might wonder, why is it that we both lure and are entrapped? Because, you know, when I do watch sports. Mm-hmm. And good grief, the commercials. And this one commercial, you know, you're back, as some military guy, you know, you're back having defended our freedom, and now we need to support you. And you say, how did, and you just so many people utter this nonsense that the more we say and promote lies like this, the more we're ensnared by them.
Yeah, there is a psychological thing, the more you repeat it.
Right. The more we sing the national anthem, the more we stand at the seventh inning of a baseball game and sing God Bless America, the more we are ensnared and controlled by the myths that we have created. So that's what he's saying here. You know, you're both entrapped by your words, and you cause others to relinquish their freedom. You know, it's just like we've said, you try to avoid doing the national anthem at a sporting event and see what the people around you do if you just sit there and you talk through it. So then he says, engage thusly, my son, my child, and choose to escape, defending yourself. So it's not just disassociate from your oaths of to a country, your oaths to and promises and pledges to religion. It's not just escape them. It's not just walk away from them, which is the first requirement to participate in the covenant. But be prepared to defend yourself. And it says here, of your own free will, elect to tear yourself away, delivering yourself from harm, saving yourself from unfavorable circumstances. For if, even temporarily, you have actually come to bowing down before the hand, the influence, and control of your country, go in an unpretentious way and press one's bone of contention with the adversarial individual or institution, boldly astonishing and overwhelming them, showing great courage against your fellow countrymen, your social, geopolitical, racial, and or religious group.
Well, you certainly did that today. Wow, what a show.
You know, there are just times when you just say, you know, sometimes you just got to say it. Yeah. You need to say it bluntly. You need to say it without equivocation. Just lay it out there. And that's what I think he's saying here.
Absolutely.
You know, boldly, astonishing them, overwhelm them. You know, what's a Muslim going to say? Oh, sir, you're talking about my religion. So, you're telling me that Muhammad wasn't a pedophile?
Absolutely.
Of course he was. You're telling me that Muhammad wasn't a rapist? The only documents that go back to his time said he was. You're saying that he wasn't engaged in the slave trade? Well, that's what it says he did. You're saying that he wasn't a mass murderer? Because, you know, all of the texts that I read show that he was a mass murderer. He said, I became victorious with terror. And, of course, when he's 53 and having sex with a six-year-old, that's pedophilia.
I think so.
So why play religious makeup? Why play religious make-believe when you're dealing with somebody this repulsive? Yeah, I think that's what God says. It's just boldly astonish and overwhelm them. Go to the adversarial individual and lay it on the line. I mean, no one has anything to lose under those circumstances. You know,
let me say something just a minute about the last two verses.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was watching a program that I had taped of Burma. And the Burmese government, which is a dictator, military dictatorship, have conspired for about 10 years and continue with the monks, the Buddhists, to wipe out the Muslims. They have turned into the same horrible thing. I mean, I've seen, they showed the films of it. It was just grotesque, horrible thing to watch, innocent people. And they decided to wipe out this group of Muslims along the coast that had been there for years and years and years and years, you know. And they have turned into the same thing that they were complaining about. I mean,
of course,
And so they're trapped by their own. The answer has to be words. You cannot just take one religion and wipe out another religion.
Right.
Be as evil as they are, you gain nothing. You just destroy.
But you know, if you were to go and arm one side against the other, or do what America does and arm both sides, how is that in any way better? How's that going to create a better result? Isn't the only thing you can do is to expose and condemn it and to isolate it?
Isolate it. Keep it away from you.
Right.
Like the disease it is.
Keep it away from you like the disease it is. You can't fix it. When people are poisoned with a disease like Bangladesh is with Islam, you can't fix it. Like Syria and Iraq are with Islam, you can't fix it.
No.
Don't think for a moment you can fix it. You can't fix it. Just boldly and bluntly admonish it. Overwhelm them with the truth. And it becomes harder and harder for disgusting groups to operate and to lure new devotees, which is what they require, when they're boldly and bluntly assailed. That's why the Ku Klux Klan has been so hugely diminished from its peak in America. That's why it's so hard to be a neo-Nazi in America, is that the information on what the Nazis advocated is so repulsive. And it's well known. But we stop short when it comes to a religion because we're just afraid.
What?
But God says, don't be afraid. Bluntly, bluntly, boldly, courageously. That's the thing he's saying. Don't be afraid to confront and attack these kinds of things. He says, don't give yourself over to apathy, to being unaware, to ignorance, to sleep, to being comatose. Especially concerning your eyes and the activity by way of an altered state of awareness of your eyelids. Open your eyes. You know, it's essential that we open our eyes, that we see the world as it is, that we are observant. Because if we're not observant, then what contribution can we make to ourselves, to our families, to anyone that's around us? We'll return and speak with the gazelle in a moment. Choose to escape, defending yourself like a gazelle. Now, Kirk, does a defending yourself, you know, America thinks, okay, well, you know, they'll never say Muslims. Al-Qaeda did 9/11, so we need to go out and defend ourselves. We need to go attack Afghanistan.
It did?
Well, Afghanistan didn't attack us. Yeah, it didn't attack us. I don't even think Al-Qaeda, in fact, I know for certain, Al-Qaeda didn't even come up with the idea of the plot. And there were Saudi Arabians that flew those planes. But why, you know, God's saying that your idea of fleeing and escaping ought to model the gazelle. Does a gazelle have a arsenal of weapons where it can be effective against an adversary in fighting them?
No, it's not going to stand and fight.
No, so it's going to flee. Because the gazelle is observant, extraordinarily observant. I don't know if you've ever seen a gazelle out in the wild, but they are really observant. They're just amazing to walk. Nothing sneaks up on a gazelle because they're super observant. God said, be like the gazelle. Be super observant and know when it's time to flee. I don't want you to go in and fighting. You know, what would happen if the gazelle decided, you know, rather than flee this time, what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to take on the pack of hyenas. The gazelle's going to say, you know, that lion pride, who are they to me? I've got claws. No, I guess I don't have claws. I've got fangs. No, I guess I don't have fangs.
Sharp teeth, right?
Sharp teeth. No, I don't have sharp teeth.
Well, horns ain't big enough.
Yeah, there's a reason that God said, be like the gazelle. He didn't say, be like the lion. He didn't say, be like the hippopotamus. He didn't say, be like the rattlesnake. He said, be like the gazelle. Why do people stop and say, well, that's not what we do? You know, we justify attacking everybody based upon the fact that, well, that's how we're defending ourselves.
Is there anywhere where God doesn't say, flee from these people or flee from these ideas?
Yeah, walk away from them.
That's all he says constantly. I mean, he took them out of Mizraim, Egypt.
Right.
He took them out of Babylon.
Yeah. Did he tell the Egyptians, I mean, the children of Israel, to turn around and the Egyptian chariots were coming and you go fight them?
No, you're breaking up a little bit. This might be my line, but no, absolutely not.
Do you remember I think it was a couple months back, Yada, where I had an article that I was talking to you about how we're like the runners of the animal kingdom.
Uh-huh.
Our bodies are set up to be runners. We're set up to run and be able to run long distances.
Right.
And that fits in right with what you just said.
Yes.
Run.
Right. Yeah.
He didn't make us strong
strong
and powerful like a gorilla. He made us so we could run.
Right. Yeah, we don't have sharp teeth, and we certainly don't have claws. We're extraordinarily vulnerable. Flee trouble. He didn't say, you know, I want you to prove your courage by attacking trouble. He says, I want you to show your courage with your words. I want you to show your courage with your words, not with your weapons. So the next thing he uses an example, he says, you know, I want you to escape, defending yourself like a chirping sparrow, a bird that sings, warns the others around him that, you know, I'm singing the alarm here. And he says, you can escape the fowler's trap if you're a chirping bird like a sparrow. Sparrow doesn't have teeth. Sparrow doesn't have claws that would do any adversary any harm. They just fly away. Then he says, you know, by the way, what's really interesting, because he's talking about apathetic, inactive individuals here, lethargic individuals. And when, you know, their government is taking over all their rights, when their government is influencing them, when their academic institutions are indoctrinating them, when their religions are poisoning them, and their militaries are stealing their freedoms, they just lay around. They don't flee those organizations. So he's putting the lethargic person and contrasting them to the observant sparrow, the observant gazelle. And say, you just lie there. You're letting this happen to you. So the habitually inactive and lethargic, the lazy bones, the person lacking discipline, ambition, and resourcefulness, he says that should see, observing and examining the conduct of the ant, her ways, and be wise. So what's the first thing that that Yahweh speaks of? You know, he's saying that rather than being inactive, that we ought to be more like the ant. And the first thing he says, beneficially. And from a relationship perspective. Now, God's just directed our attention to ants, and it says, you want to be wise? Then look at the ant. Oh, apathetic one. What is about the ant? It says, she has no, and then katzen is the first word. No leader, no ruler, no commander, no officer, no government, no imposed authority. No dictator, no governor, no chief, no prince, no royalty, no superior individual, no magistrate is from the verbal root, katsa, one who cuts down, shears off, and scrapes away, one who determines borders and limits. Oh, boy.
Hmm. You can't have Christianity with this.
No, you can't. No ruler. So you can't have the priest or the pastor over the flock.
No.
You can't have a pope. You can't have cardinals. You can't have bishops. You can't have fathers. Can't have a military without this.
Oh.
Can't have a large corporation without this.
Or Congress.
So if you want to be wise according to God, you can't have a Congress. You can't have a political infrastructure. You can't support large corporations. You can't support your military. You can't support your religious sect or belief system, because they all have hierarchies. No rulers, no commanders is what God's view of, that's the way you ought to be. Then he says, just in case you didn't get it, he says, I'm not just talking about the head of state. I'm not just talking about the Pope. I'm not just condemning, you know, the head of a large governmental organization. He says, they have no work foreman, no public official, no clerk or scribe. This is shorter. No overseer, no manager, no civil servants, no military officer or personnel. No judge, no court, no clerk, no record keeper. Wow. So now he went right from the top. He says they don't have any of that. But then he went to the middle. Don't have any of that either.
No.
Nor anyone claiming to be in charge or in control. Most especially, they don't have a lord who reigns over them. Anyone acting as a lord or master, exercising authority or claiming dominion over government, citizens, or slaves. No lords. No one who claims to be in control or in charge. No work foreman, no civil servants. No government leaders, no dictators, no commanders, no officer or government of any kind. He used three different words and said, this is what I'd like about the ants, that you could learn about the ants. And do you think any of that was known 3,000 years ago? Do you think that Yahweh told them what it was about the ants that he respected, that we should emulate? Because if he didn't, if he just said, look at the ways of the ants, we still wouldn't figure it out. He's not saying, I like the ants because they're busy little beavers. Although he is suggesting that he likes their sense of industry, which means that if you want to be liked by Yahweh, then you ought to be like him and be engaged. He's not for the, you know, the Islamic paradise that constantly presents. There are couches and comfy pillows that you recline all day against. Yeah, it's God's idea. Let's be active. Let's go do stuff together.
Exactly.
No, you've got no excuse for not knowing. You know, engage. Let's... you know, this is, again, he says, you know, this is for the habitually inactive and lethargic one. And says, you know, they don't have a taskmaster. You know, Paul claimed to be the apostle over the Gentile world. You know, he was their father. They were his children. He was over them. He claimed oversight over them. God says, no. That's not the way I set this up. So you, what you found is true, that this is all accurate regarding ants. It kind of gives you goosebumps in a way, because this was not known 3,000 years ago. It wasn't known until really the last 50 years. But you know, recently, in fact, over the weekend, I got a letter from Richard. And Richard said, you know, I just found, I was fascinated by what you had to say about ants. What Yahweh had to say about ants. And he says, you know that they have now found something really extraordinary about ants. When I mentioned that super colony, I didn't say where it was, but it's on the coast of Japan, that super colony of ants that they found that, you know, has millions and millions of ants in it. Do you know that that's part of one extended family that's on every continent except Antarctica? And that it all came from one family in Argentina. And that this is the largest family on Earth, and this family exists throughout California and the Americas. It exists throughout Europe, and it exists throughout Asia, and it is one super colony, one super-sized family, and they're all cooperative. In fact, if there are various colonies for this super-sized family, they won't fight each other. They won't harm each other. They all recognize each other as family. All work together cooperatively around the world.
Wow.
And so don't you kind of get a sense of the covenant here?
Mm-hmm.
You've got a group of people empowered without any intermediary.
Screams out.
Right. And, you know, when Paul wrote that the Torah is a cruel taskmaster, God says, hey, you know, I want you to look at the ants because there is no taskmaster. No foreman. No disciplinarian. There is no government of any kind. And they all get along. They're not out there killing each other with armies. Look at the ant.
What is the debate about this?
I don't know. How could you think you could sing God Bless America and you're carrying around your book named after With Baal, With the Lord, Babel Confusion, and you don't get it when it has this right in it? Don't adhere to a political infrastructure, a religious infrastructure, a business infrastructure, large corporations, a military infrastructure. Then it says, she, we didn't know this until recently, but the preponderance of ants are female. She prepares her food. In fact, the workers are all females. She prepares her food in the summer. She gathers in the harvest for her storable food, serving as a source of nourishment. You know, everybody's, the whole communist thing and the socialist thing is, you know, how much do you need? We need to take all of the excess from the one percenters and spread it around. Just take what they have done and let's give it to ourselves because they don't need so much. Well, the end saying, it's not about what you need. It's about being prepared. It's having more than you need. And it's about storing up. You know, it's not about being dependent upon Social Security because you didn't plan for your own retirement. No. It's about doing what is necessary while you're able to be prepared. And of course, who is the source of nourishment and from Yahweh's perspective, set apart spirit, right?
Spirit.
She prepares food for us to eat, our nourishment. Then God says, for how long and to what extent, oh, inactive, apathetic, and lethargic one, will you just lie there and remain inactive? When and what will it take for you to arise and consistently stand up? You know, that's what I was trying to do this morning, is saying, let's just stand up. Let's call a spade a spade. Why are we so apathetic? Why are we so reserved? What's it going to take, God's saying, before we stand up? How bad does it have to be? How delusional, how religious, how political, how indoctrinated, how dependent on these sinister organizations do you have to be? What's it going to take for you to stand up, God's saying? What is the answer to that question?
It defies logic.
Yeah, what's it going to take? That's the question, you know, a week ago on this program, a week ago Monday. I was asking that very question. I was saying, what's it going to take to get more people to recognize that you ought not be patriotic, that you're acting against God's instructions if you're pro-military, if you're aligned with a political party, if you're religious? What's it going to take for you to stand up? What's it going to take for you to engage? What's it going to take for you to shed your apathy and your ignorance? You know, as I was talking this morning about the people playing a religious make-believe,
mm-hmm.
What's it going to take? God's blaming them. The truth is there. It's obvious. What's it going to take for you to wake up and stop being played for a fool?
I'm not sure it'll take it all.
Yeah, I'm not sure it'll take anything. For how long and to what extent? Inactive, apathetic, and lethargic. Well, will you just lie there and remain inactive? When and what will it take for you to arise and stand up from your altered state of awareness? He says, then, a little activity, a little laziness, a little amount of sleep, a little amount of folding one's hands together in a lethargic manner to rest. You know, a little bit of it's okay, but boy, we've taken it to an extreme.
Yes, a little R&R and they're going to hurt you, but come on.
Yeah, then he says, for he will come, walking and behaving like a leader or a guide, taking control, and you're going to lack what's needed. and you're going to have a scarcity of something absolutely vital, needing what you do not have, causing you to be bereaved and diminished. So whether this was, he was speaking of the wannabe Apostle Paul,
mm-hmm.
because they were not properly prepared. Paul came in and
mm-hmm.
swept the rug out from underneath them, and then they were found wanting.
Well, no, the disciples kicked him out.
Yeah, they did.
They knew because they were prepared. I mean, they should be a classic example. Unfortunately, the rest of the world was no match for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think Yael Conan fought him right to the bitter end. We know Shimon Kefesh fought him right to the bitter end. Yaakov fought him to the bitter end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, personally, any of them were as aggressive against him as they ought to have been. But
well,
they,
the story we hear, I mean, we...
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, who knows how much more aggressive they were, and of course, it's just all buried now. Yahweh and Yahusha certainly set the example of being extraordinarily aggressive towards them. And then you look at in the last days,
mm-hmm.
the Torahless one's going to take them by surprise. And they're going to lack what is needed, which is the Torah, to refute him. So they're apathetically, you know, their lack of initiative, their lack of resourcefulness, their lack of being observant, their inability or unwillingness to flee these human institutions, they are going to be easy prey. And he says, you got nothing to blame but yourself.
Well, I can speak for myself that until I found good translations of the Torah, I mean, then it became, thank goodness, it became, I'm able to do just that, you know, because now you can fight the good fight, as they say. You know?
Yeah, you can fight the good fight. The antidote for this is the Torah, and God's going to say that in exactly those terms as we move through this text. It'll probably be tomorrow that we'll get to that point, but that's the antidote, and if you don't have it, if you haven't prepared in advance, then you're easy to fool. I mean, that's the thing we kept on talking about on Friday. It's very difficult, if not impossible, to fool somebody who is immersed in the Torah, somebody who has observed the Torah. You can't fool them with the government rhetoric. You can't fool them with the military propaganda. You can't fool them with religious protestations, because they know better.
Yeah. Every time I listen to the politicians, every time I listen to the news, I just I scream at them, or I talk back to them on the radio or the TV, and just say, you're a liar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do, too.
What a liar. And I can prove it. Yeah, don't allow me on your show. I would cut you apart, man.
Yes.
Newsman. I would just say.
Yeah. That's my reaction as well. I said, why are you saying that? It's an absolute lie. And yet the journalist is so unaware of what's being said, they can't even refute it. What do you think, Glenn?
Nobody seems to care about the apathy problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyway, but I'm pumped. Anyway, waiting for the rim shot. Cue the rim shot.
I got it.
Yeah, I know. No one seems to care about the apathy problem because they're too apathetic.
Right.
Yeah. Well, by the way, God's making the point here that apathy is the problem, and that it's apathy that leads to ignorance, and if you are ignorant of that which matters, if you don't have a backbone, if you're just going along because that's the easy way to go, if you're dependent on all of the entitlements, it says then when trouble comes, and it's going to come, you're just going to be there lacking. You'll be diminished. You'll cease to exist.
The other thing I called about, Yada, is to challenge your own, the frustrations of these things that are bothering you. It seems to me you're sort of cutting off your nose to spite your own face. I mean, if the people who listen or listen to that kind of stuff hear, you know, what you have to say, it's an audience, you know, you'd be interested in reaching, you know.
Yeah,
and there's, you know, it's like I can't see shooting yourself in your foot or repeating your own message to the people who are listening, mm-hmm. you know, because of the other stuff, the stuff that's bugging you.
Yeah, well. It is difficult to endure and have listeners endure the ads that accompany this this program, and I'm not paid anything by them. They don't doesn't come to me, but
right.
Oh my goodness! And it's just such an onslaught of rubbish and false claims that it it's troublesome when you could deliver this message, and I could do it in 60% of the time on a more flexible schedule. Without any of the commercial interruption. Now, for many of the listeners to this program, they listen to the archives and they go to Richard's Bless Yahweh site, and it has the programs categorized. They don't have the nonsense on the commercials. At which point, my rant against the Bible Stick would seem pretty stupid because they wouldn't have heard the commercial for the Bible Stick. But you're right. There is a it is a challenge just to know where is the best place to be. It's just like you could walk into a church and say, you are all lost. And let me tell you the reasons that you are all lost and coming to this church and why Paul and Christianity are false. But I'm not going into the church to do that. Yeah, I wouldn't go into the church to do that. And so is this syndicate now, because of all the things that it surrounds itself with, like going into a church? Something to think about.